you know, I got a Weller, I think it's a 100 watt, 140 or 120 watt dual wattage. And I can make it as hot as I want to. I just don't want to make it as hot as it takes. It's crazy. It just doesn't work.
So how is your surface preparation when you do it? Are you brushing or taking some sandpaper to... Well, first off, what part are you having trouble with?
Well, mainly the braid. When you screw everything together with the reducer and whatnot, you see the braid through the holes and you're trying to solder with it. I'm not getting any solder adhesion to either the main case or the reducer case or the braid itself. It just washes through. It's like water off a duck's butt.
Okay, so my suggestion is when you turn back the shield to go in, take some sandpaper and scruff it up. You may be having an issue with an oxidation or something on the braid itself. So peel that back. But the other thing I want to tell you is if you're using a reducer and you tighten that up, if you get some pliers and you tighten it up, you're going to get a compression fitting. So you're going to have a tight connection there. But the other half of it is what I do is when I take it out, I twist it around. I almost make a rope out of it and twist it and wrap it around the coax perpendicular to it so that it gives you more surface area rather than just trying to attach to the braid. But you should be getting good adhesion with the compression fitting alone of the reducer.
That could be the case, I suppose, but when I do go through all this effort of half melting the whole connector with the soldering, and I just see that there's no adhesion to anything, like that was a waste of time, and I probably destroyed the whatever mechanical connection that was there in the beginning.
Well, you shouldn't be using the compression part until after you've soldered it. I would tighten it down after I soldered it. This way everything really just gets compressed into one piece. But I would, if you're having trouble with adhesion, I would take some sandpaper or emery cloth or whatever you have, that's fine, and go over the braiding and see if you're having any contaminants on there that are stopping it from adhesing. And then the same thing, you can either use a file to break the surface tension of the PL-259 where the holes are, go perpendicular to it. And again, I think a lot of it has to do with the heat. You got to get it hot. So get some solder on the tip of your gun or your iron and let that help you heat it up. And then it should draw it right into the braid.
Well, the heating techniques you mentioned I use, and that's not an issue. I get plenty of heat in there. But the cleaning issues you're talking about are very similar to the techniques I use with plumbing. And maybe that's the missing element here, is getting it down to raw metal beyond whatever manufacturing oils or handling contamination or just oxidation are present. You might have just hit on the prize bell there. Get in there really into those small little crevices and wire brush it or sand it or grind it or something to expose the raw metal. I think you might have hit on what I'm missing. Interesting.
Okay, good luck. I'll let you guys get back to it.
Okay, thank you very much. I think the magic word that was mentioned was brass. I think the gentleman's connector collection probably is somewhat higher quality than the present Chinese varieties that we're subject to these days.
Well, hopefully, even if it's a metal, you should be able to have some conduction. And if the center is getting adhesion, then maybe the outside will too. But I would try breaking the surface tension with either a grinder or a file and see what happens there. And then go from there. And also, again, you're getting a lot of connectivity with the compression fitting.
I will definitely look into both. Very, very good stuff. Thank you very much. I think we've run it out tonight, but I hope we revisit this on another evening because it's something that affects us all here on this repeater station net. Inspector Roy, thank you for your time.
Okay, very good, Jim. I wish you good luck, as always. If it's a success or not quite a success, I'm sure you'll come back and tell us what happened so that we could all learn. Because we're all subject to these modern, very cheap alloyed connectors these days. Few of us can afford silver-plated stuff, but most people don't. Okay, on to the next gentleman on my list here tonight is Alex, 82DU. What's your question tonight, Alex?
So I got a Jaegu G90, which is a 20-watt radio that reportedly has a weak front end. That was accurate. It was washed out with AM radio signals. I got a VCI filter made by K9DP that seemed to solve the problem with the G90. Is it worth trying to insert an AM broadcast filter and see if it quiets down my IC7300? Is that something people do in New York? ABCDU.
To my understanding, no. I've never needed to do that. It's not exactly, I wouldn't describe it as a weak front end. A weak front end to me would be something that doesn't supply enough amplification. The front end is supposed to do sort of two things. It's supposed to produce a strong low noise, high gain amplification of the RF entering from your transmission line. And it's also supposed to block out frequency bands that are not something that you're trying to receive. So I wouldn't quite call it a weak front end. It's kind of an open front end where it lets every signal through and allows AM signals screw up your reception. Desensing is what we usually use as a term. Most good amateur radios that I'm aware of have that ability. The front end will block AM. I haven't had any problems. Have you noticed any AM signals leaking into your reception on other bands?
It was very apparent on the G90. Like, you could hear the commercials and the jingles. I didn't know if it would be, like, I don't have it to that extent at all on the IC7300, but there's all sorts of random interference. I thought maybe some of it could be some of that AM to a less extent. I didn't know if that was something people had tried. Because it really makes the G90 unusable without that little filter in line. ABCDU or
AC2GS. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the problem with the Chinese radios, that they have an open front end that lets anything get into it and desense it. You won't find that to be the case, as far as I'm aware, with Japanese or American radios. They usually have much better front ends. You know, if you want to experiment, you could save yourself some money. You could just use the same filter that you're using for the Chinese radio on your ICOM and see if it makes any difference. My guess would be that you wouldn't see any difference. So then you could save money by not having to buy another AM filter unnecessarily for an ICOM branded radio. If anyone has any other opinions, if anyone out there has bandpass filters that block AM signals from their HF radios that aren't Chinese manufactured, please hit that push to talk.
BHD, would a not well considered thought, but I throw it out there.
Certainly.
I won't ask the question. Roy, you or somebody more knowledgeable than me can ask it. But what type of antenna is he using? And is there any RF choking going on that would potentially keep the feed line from being the part of the antenna, et cetera, et cetera? I think those things might be appropriate.
Okay. That shouldn't really be a factor. Your front end of your receiver could get a lot of signals in from broadcasters, but they'll tend to reject them because the frequency is so out of bounds to what the design of the front end is made for. So I don't think an RF choke is going to, I mean, if you have a leaky front end like the Jegu, then you want to minimize any particular area of transmission line that could be operating as a as yet more broadcast antenna signal. So it's kind of, if you had the problem in the first place, yes, the RF choke would help, but probably the bandpass filter that Alex is using suffices because it's so out of bounds.
Roger that. I have nothing more to add. KD2VHD.
Okay, very good, Jim. I assume the silence is basically that no one out there who cares to say anything has needed to put a filter to filter out broadcast signals on an HF radio of theirs. So, Alex, I can't tell you definitively, but as far as I'm aware, most expensive Japanese American-made radios, their front ends are built a lot better than the Jegu. It's their reason for existing is their price point is significantly lower than the other manufacturers. So they're trying to kind of get into the market, and if their dreams come true, basically take over the market based on lower quality, workmanship type of radios, like they've done on all kinds of different commercial fields.
A VDH with a similar problem.
Yes, John.
Years ago, I had an old Lafayette receiver. It was the HE80, and it covered 6 meters. However, what it did, it had a little front-end built-in converter that converted 50 to 54 megs down to the vicinity of 7, I think 7 to 11 megahertz. And what I would notice would happen is that in the evening, a lot of the very strong overseas shortwave stations in the 7 to 8 megahertz range, I would hear them on when the receiver was in the 6 meter position. I found what I had to do is, this is going back a way, I bought one of those little Amico 6 meter front end preamps that had a Nuvistor in it. I think it was a 6DW4, one of those little Nuvistor tubes, and that cleared it up. So you'll probably have to do something like that, get some more tuned circuits in the front end of it.
Okay, but that makes a lot of sense because your radio is designed to pick up signals in the 6 megahertz range. It was only that it was using some kind of internal transferter trick to be able to listen and operate high frequencies. So you had a front end that was selective, but it was selective for a frequency that you didn't want it to be selective for when you were using that transverter switch.
Yeah, the internal converter on that receiver, it didn't have enough tuned circuits that were actually in the 6 meter in the 50 megahertz range, so stuff was coming through. Coming right through the converter that was in the 7 megahertz range and showing up on the 6 meter position.
There's your customer.
Yeah, I think it was Chet who wanted to say something.
Yeah, let me get this straight. I was in the one ear because I'm working on something. He wants to get rid of broadcast, AM broadcast, so he can listen to ham radio above the the broadcast area. Is that what he wants to do? I think I might have something for him.
Okay, Chet. The point was that he has two radios. He has an ICOM. He has a Chinese Jegu. The Jegu apparently has a real open wide end, and he was getting a lot of broadcast signal interfering with his ability to listen to on-frequency transmissions. So he bought himself a filter to filter out the broadcast AM. He now asks if he thinks it's a good idea to get another one for the ICOM. He has not heard any direct interference from the broadcast band, but he's wondering if perhaps some of the background noise he hears on his receiver would diminish if he filtered out broadcast AM band broadcast frequencies.
Well, let me just say this. I just went to eBay. Maybe he bought the same thing and he was successful in his Eagle or whatever that Chinese radio was. It's $17.95 on eBay, and I give the number if anybody wants to get a pencil. But let me just read. I'll say what it is. But it's a filter for broadcast band, and it's small. And it says it blocks the broadcast AM band between 0 KC and 1705 megahertz with 60 dBs of attenuation. Pass band is from about 2.5 megacycles and above. Insertion loss is less than 2 dB and mostly 0.3 dB. I came across something on eBay. Is that what the fellow was looking for? Go ahead.
Well, I'll ask Alex. Alex already found a filter. It might be the one that you mentioned, and he used it for his Chinese one, and it benefited him. The problem that I have is, as far as I'm aware, modern-day Japanese radios have very nice selectivity and front ends that are rather tight and aren't going to get screwed up by the AM broadcast transmissions that are near us. So I don't know of too many people who considered the need for that filter. I don't think it would benefit him for his ICOM. I'm sure it benefited him a great deal for the Zegu, but I think it would be unnecessary, and that my suggestion was to try the one that he already bought for the Zegu on the ICOM and see if he feels it lessens any background noise and act accordingly.
Well, maybe I say one thing, other thing.
Sure.
All right. Well, everybody should know, or some people know, here I am, 78 years old, I'm still working, I drive a school bus, and previous to the summer, I was driving a bus that didn't have a radio in it, so I took my portable radio, a beautiful radio, works great, even works on ham frequencies, and it's like a $250 radio, and I put on the dashboard, and on AM, I love listening to AM, I listen to talk radio, not FM, and I'll have to tell you, in my little route, going from, let's say, it was like a 4-mile ride every morning and every afternoon, I keep passing cell phone sites. Every 5 blocks, there's another cell phone site, and with the radio on the dashboard, I'm happily listening to it before I come to the cell phone site. As soon as I come to a cell phone site, I hear my radio gets blocked out by the cell phone sites. And this is a good radio. It's expensive radio. And there's so many cell phone sites out there, they're polluting the atmosphere in the AM band. Roy, go ahead.
Okay, I mean, unfortunately, it's kind of potatoes, but, you know, one man's fish is another man's fowl. A lot of guys would kind of tell you that their cell phones are a lot more important than AM radio. We talked a couple of months ago that some of the major automotive industry manufacturers were suggesting that they get rid of their AM radios. That would make their life a little bit easier to deal with the RF generated by all their electronics and their new electronic cars. So I don't think AM is going to have a whole new renaissance, unfortunately. I think its retirement has been delayed, but not done away with. So, you know, it depends on your interest. For you, the AM is much more important than the cell phone. For a lot of people, and I think there are more cell phones in the world than there are human beings. So for those people, the cell phone, I think, is going to be more important.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, it's technology with marches. It's technology marches on. Jim, you wanted to say something?
Oh, that's wonderful you could pick that up so good in duplex. I was just going to make it the odd comment that keep in mind the use case that Beth describes the Zygo G90 is for when the AM broadcast stations aren't there. So in that case, it'll do just fine. Otherwise, put a filter on.
Well, yeah, I mean, ultimately, I agree with you. And I don't think it's, when they designed it for rural China. I think it's basically they designed it to have flashy features that they could advertise and cut corners wherever they could cut. And by limiting the selectivity of the front end, they probably saved a couple of bucks. So that's probably what's going on in their mind. And, yeah, I mean, there are benefits and problems with the method I'm using these days. The benefit is that with full duplex, I can tell when I double with anyone or when anyone's doubling. So it's, I'm not going to go on and on and on and on and then unkey and find out that someone is doing a soliloquy in the background. The downside is I don't get any of the courtesy tones, the beeps, the buzzes, the IDs, all those types of things. Although, as I mentioned, I run Audacity, so I'm running the waveform. So I don't hear the courtesy tones, but I see the courtesy tones.
You certainly are a coordinator. Nicely done. There's the G90. Good rig for its purpose, not for all purpose.
Yeah, for what it is, it's a very good radio. It's a very relatively inexpensive radio. It has a lot of flashy features. But you have to understand the compromise. There's always going to be a compromise. The same thing with Baofengs. There are a lot of hams that are very annoyed with people who whip out their Baofengs. Baofengs make great disposable handy-talkies. They cost less than a case for one of my other Japanese handy-talkies. They have their benefits. They have their compromises. As long as you're well aware of where it lands and you're happy with it, then great, wonderful. I'm not going to rain on anyone's parade. So, but just keep in mind that there are limitations, but it's not that expensive to get a band filter, as Chet mentioned.
There is certainly a place for a Zippo lighter, and there is certainly a place for a Bic lighter. They both have their place in our world.
Yes, I second the emotion.
KG2R Watt, good evening.
Good evening, David.
There are two little questions relating to this discussion. I hope that you're having an excellent evening. One of them is, I saw a woman with that big, what do they call that Samsung phone? And it unfolds and it becomes double screen. And I thought, well, you know, this looks kind of nice, but like, would it be useful? And down the center of the double screen is like a crease. And I wonder if that also might be a problem. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, the folded model displays have been a subject of technology for 5 years now. The very earliest ones that were designed had very limited lifespans. Every time you flexed and extended it, you were kind of ticking off its time bomb. They have built them, I'm told, much more sturdily and survivable. There is a premium to be paid. The benefit is you have a larger display area with taking up a smaller amount of the volumes are the same, but functionally it's a smaller package when you put it in your pocket. So the foldable, there are two types. There are folding models that have separate displays on either side and has a hinge in the middle. Those are less expensive to manufacture, less likely to malfunction. And then you have the new bleeding edge technology of the folding displays. Some people love them, some people don't, but they're probably here to stay because, again, people like big displays, but they don't like to carry big displays.
Well, one of my thoughts that went through my head when I saw that phone, you know, said an engineer must have invented this, because if an artist invented it, it would be more functional. I guess, you know, so much screen area means that you have to have a tremendous battery capacity in there. And I'm not sure if there was so much space for, you know, a sizable battery in there. And also, you know, it didn't give me the feeling that certain things, you know, were being addressed, like audio quality, picture quality, you know. And maybe it was just out there so people could see it, look how great this phone is. And I don't know, shit, the person who had it was basically all over the phone.
Well, I don't know. I've been following the technology. Samsung makes very expensive, very high quality products. I assume that the display resolution is compatible with standard non-folding displays. The battery life has to be somewhat reasonable, otherwise people would dismiss it, which I don't think they're doing. You know, they're paying a significant premium for this technology. So I'm assuming that they factored in battery life and resolution and general quality. Again, the early models tended to fail, which was not a big surprise to almost anyone. But I think these latest generation versions are a little bit sturdier than the original ones. So would I purchase something like this? At my point, I don't see any point in it. I can do with a smaller display screen for a cell phone. If I need a larger display screen, I'll get something like an iPad.
Well, you know, I think I need something that has three different phones inside one. One with the screen and internet data, another one with the no internet data and mobile carrier and private music and FM broadcast, and one of a cell phone with FM broadcast, and maybe, you know, the equivalent of CD audio playing through the system into a pair of wired headphones. You know, that for me would be a fantastic phone.
Well, I'm not up to date with all the different Android models because there's a lot of them. I know Apple specifically disallowed any application that that triggered FM. They had chipsets that they used which could be enabled for FM reception, and they locked them down. So they didn't want anyone to use FM. But there are streaming services. If you maintain an internet access point through your cell towers, you can have digital music streamed to you, any and all types, and they can be bounced through Bluetooth into whatever headsets you pair them with. So it's a doable thing, just a slightly different way of doing it than you would like. There's a kind of more generic ability. You know, cellular phones are already designed to lock into the internet, and the internet is already designed to stream all manner of music. So relying on FM broadcasters is somewhat a difficult local phenomena. It depends where you are, what you hear, and what you can hear, as opposed to, you know, lock into the internet and you hear anything you want to hear.
QSL. I've tried to get FM broadcast from the bottom of the band all the way to the top, and I found that many of the stations that weren't provided by one application but maybe that would be provided from another. Yeah, I think the way FM broadcast was presented, when you used a radio, I think it's much better and more useful than having to find your stations on some kind of radio app, TuneIn, or iHeart, and some other one.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like the old song. I think it was, what, 58 channels and nothing to watch?
QSL, what it is. FM broadcast, you know. And FM broadcast and wave capability and AIFF capability and good quality sound, you know. Most phones, they don't have.
Well, I mean, it depends on the phone. It depends upon what kind of earpiece you're using. If expensive earpieces do better jobs, Bluetooth can mangle an audio signal. Better Bluetooth chipsets do a better job. So it's you know, it's the weak link in the chain. If you have a strong link in every single link of the chain, you can get decent audio even from a cell phone. It's all ones and zeros, ultimately.
Well, I tell you, I use the same pair of wired headphones for my iPhone SE 2020, my Sonom XP3 Plus, and an MP3 player that does high-definition audio. And hands down, it's the high-definition audio because the source is fantastic. And in the iPhone and in the Sonom XP3 Plus, the quality of the source is like MP3. So, yeah, there is a big difference. It's sort of like listening to LPs that are really clean as opposed to listening to streaming audio from YouTube.
Well, again, it sort of depends upon your source. It's most cost-effective is to decrease the bit rate and the transmission costs and, you know, what you're paying for your Internet access and such. So most people can tolerate a bit stream that's low resolution. There are services out there. They pop up and then they fail because it costs too much. Where you can get ridiculously high bit streams. You can have signals reproducing 40,000 hertz audio signals, like our ears can hear that. So it's out there. It's not as popular because it tends to have a built-in premium on it. But it's still out there. Again, it's all ultimately ones and zeros. So if your hardware that changes the bits to sound are high enough quality, you can get better than decent sound out of something as, you know, like a cell phone. And keep in mind, you know, there are cell phones out there, and I always get a nosebleed when I think about it, going for $1,400, you know. I mean, it's not like the old days where you could pick it up for a couple hundred bucks. Oh, there are models that you can, but there are other models that you can't.
Well, think about it. Think about it, you know, that they can make a phone with a high-definition capability with DAC conversion, you know, and they don't do it. They don't do it. I'm pretty sure that you can purchase high-definition audio, high-definition version of records that you know. You can buy them, download them into your desktop computer, and even like Radio Paradise. Radio Paradise, lossless streaming, and you could lossless stream into your phone, and that sounds really good.
Okay, so you basically repeated what I said earlier. They're a little bit few and far between because commercially you have to pay a premium and most people are not willing to. Lower resolution sound sounds good enough for them. So, and some people have the tinnest of ears. So you could play complete garbage and they're more than happy with it. Yes, please, say again.
PhD.
Yes, Jim?
I have a thought that might put a grin to a couple of your faces on this topic. There's a website called Radio Garden, radio.garden, that literally lets you spin the globe around and pinpoint broadcast radio stations all over the world, and some not broadcast. Some of it is like, you know, JFK's tower and whatnot, all sorts of radio sources. You spin the globe and you hit the dot and it plays you American country music in Ireland or Scottish music in Wales or all sorts of stuff all over the world. If you're exploring broadcast radio, that's definitely a journey. I highly advocate for it. Radio.garden.
Okay, I will check that out. It sounds intriguing.
I listen to something like that on my iPhone, but for some reason, maybe about one-third of the stations, they were on other services.
What do you mean by other services?
Well, Light FM 106.7 was on iHeart, and Q104.3 also on iHeart, and if I bought the subscription, if I paid for the subscription, maybe those stations would also appear.
Okay, it's not exactly what Jim was talking about, but I think you're talking about the privatizing, profiting, and balkanization of intellectual property. There are venture capitalists out there with a lot of money that they apparently don't need, who are buying up access and splitting things up. Hey, you want to watch Star Trek? There's only one streaming service that does it. It's Paramount Plus this week. It'll be called something else next week. You want to watch The Flintstones? There's probably only one streaming service that does that. And so you have to, at this point in time, before the great stream wars end, have to decide how many streaming services you're willing to pay out if you have a diverse interest in intellectual property. My guess is this is a transient thing. There's not enough consumers out there crazy enough to support all the streaming services. And so one after another, like dominoes, most of them will fall. And, you know, we'll have some streaming version of Disney or something that rules them all.
That's it. So with FM broadcast, you can listen to everything for free. When they play the commercials, you're not paying for the commercials. You know, you get an old TV, and you get a digital to analog converter, and you connect an antenna, and you can watch 85 channels, you know, without having to pay at all. You're just taking the signal right out of the atmosphere.
And yet you're watching a whole bunch of commercials. That was the original design of broadcast technology.
True. I watched all the commercials, but at least I didn't pay extra for that.
Okay, well, but you don't pay extra for the commercials. You usually pay extra for not having the commercials. So, again, what you did when you were a kid, you're doing again now. The broadcast world still continues. They still run ads. I hope they make money. They probably make a significantly more offering their stream to these venture capitalists who are going to stream it elsewhere. But you have access to those stations that you can receive. The stations that you are too far away, you cannot receive. So the only way you're going to get them is if they're relayed or streamed via the Internet. So, yes, you can pay less and see more commercials. I personally, unfortunately, hate commercials. I try not to see too many. I have things where I can hit a fast-forward button and whiz right past the commercials. And I'm not unhappy to pay for that privilege.
Well, you know, I listen to Q104.3 to 104.3 on iHeartRadio, and when I click the link for the stream, first there's video commercial. I don't know how many of them. Then there are commercials from the broadcast. So there's more commercials. Say, I'd rather just listen to the radio.
Okay, and that is your right and your privilege. It's not that you're getting something for free. You're paying with it in a different way. You choose which ones you prefer. Again, that's fine. Your preference is to listen to commercials like we all did when we were much younger, and that's okay with you. The companies that provide the transmissions are making money, add money, and they're happy with you. So it's a mutual admiration society, but they're still, you know, you're still paying for it, not in money, but in the moments of your life that you can't get back anywhere. So, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Well, you know, I could watch CBS News on my TV, or I could stream it for free on my computer, you know, and the TV takes up a lot of space.
Okay, I think there was someone who was doubling with you, the gentleman doubling. I couldn't quite make it out. What would you want to say?
Sorry about that. KD2VHD, Jim. What you're describing really, I think, will appeal to you on Radio Garden, Radio.Garden. It's amazing. You can zoom in on all these places all over the world and listen to what they're saying, playing, whatever. And when it all goes down, well, the G90 will do just fine. So there's that.
Okay, I mean, the problem, well, I don't know if it's a problem. We live in a capitalist society. All these things are supposed to generate profits for people. So somewhere, someplace, somehow, there's someone making a profit off of you. It might be obvious in that you might go to your credit card billing section and see where they took 1995 away, or it could be vaguer by suggesting that you look at a product in a general ad, or something really oblique that you're almost unaware of by selling bits and pieces of knowledge about you. There are data salesmen that sell your likes and dislikes, where you go, what you see, what you do, and they make a profit off of doing that. And if you have any doubts about that, you know, the next time you look up something in Google and then suddenly find it being advertised on a website just randomly, Big Brother is always watching us. So you pay either through money or through time or through your privacy. So you always pay. God bless America. God bless capitalism.
Well, think about it this way. If your information is really valuable, then, you know, there's got to be some price for that.
No, it's very valuable. There are more than a few companies that buy and sell information. Gmail offers free mail. I hope people out there realize that this is not some altruistic thing. They comb through everyone's Gmail to extract information about people, and they sell information. Facebook sells information as well. A lot of these big companies sell a lot of information to information brokers, and they pass it back and forth. So it's part of the fuel that runs the Internet these days.
Yeah, I try to keep my best work off of the Internet. So, you know, they only get a little piece, a little bit of it, and the rest of it I keep for myself. Roy, I have another question for you.
Okay, we have to leave a little room for Wesley. He wanted to discuss something as well tonight.
No.
Yes, I am.
We can do this some other time.
Okay. This is my time, right?
Yes, this is your time.
Okay, I was away from the radio. I just heard it. Okay, we have a few subjects. I would be just saying a few words, and I believe Dr. Roy can do all talking. We have faster than wind, which is Veritasium saga with the Chinese Veritasium girl. That's one, and then we have a Swedish Artemis technology spoiler. Then we have, I believe, Paul could cover it, the 34A and X-37B, which is classified project of DARPA. But, okay, faster than wind, Dr. Roy.
Yeah, keep in mind, Wesley, that this is your thing. I watched it about 8 months ago, 9 months ago. I didn't rewatch it. It was interesting. It's very visual. I couldn't begin to tell anyone, explain it to them over a radio, and so I didn't really rewatch it.
Well, that I understand, but the thing is that the concept by itself. So Veritasium have made a test with the builder of the hover that has propeller on Mojave Desert, and he proved he was trying to prove whether the vehicle can move faster than wind. So the question to the audience is, can we build a vehicle that is powered by wind? At that time, there was a propeller that was used. And that vehicle would be moving faster than wind and to XGN. Okay, it looks like no response, Dr. Roy. Maybe you can explain it better.
Well, I mean, once again, I didn't watch the Veritasium again. I watched it the first time he put it out. It was interesting. It's a bit esoteric. I don't, for the life of me, know how you can explain it over a radio. You kind of have to see it in action. And actually, the earlier portions of the video still don't quite to solve the problem. You sort of see something that looks like it might be going faster than the wind, but, you know, it's not intuitive. So I don't remember the details of how they finally concluded, but I remember it was a demonstration. It was not some guy standing in front of an empty chalkboard just talking. So Veritasium is a great series of YouTubes, and I recommend him strongly to any and everyone. Dick used to regularly discuss that YouTube channel. I enjoy it as well. But you really should see the video. You know, to have someone attempt to explain, you know, if you've never seen an elephant before, you know, and someone gave you a picture versus someone tried to explain it over a radio, where do you think you'd end up with the best idea of what an elephant looks like?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's counterintuitive. So yes, the story was that there was a gentleman who built a two-wheel vehicle that was powered by the propeller, and no pedals, no nothing. He went into it, and after the initial push, the vehicle starts to move. And the funny thing is that propeller was turning backwards. That's why it's counterintuitive. So instead of propeller being the driving power, driving force, the propeller was actually turning the opposite way. Like if we had a vehicle with a propeller that is able to move free, and we start to push that vehicle. So the propeller will, of course, turn due to the wind motion. And after that sort of controversy, there was one of the professors who decided to make a bid for $10,000 that you cannot move faster than wind. And that involved another video with professors from various numbers of universities, MIT in between them, and they came to the conclusion that the vehicle can move faster than wind. In other words, there is no motor in it, it's just a propeller, and if you have a propeller that has a pitch of 0.7, then this propeller will actually make the vehicle move faster than wind. The end of the story is that gentleman, the professor of physics, lost $10,000. He paid that $10,000 to Veritasium, and Veritasium decided to make this $10,000 available to three people out of many who will came up with counterintuitive projects of any sort. And then we come into the Chinese girl. I hope you saw that Chinese girl. He visited a very young woman, an engineer, very well educated. Her father was in mechanics. And she's a pilot. She's a rocket builder. She has so many skills. And she also made the model that proved that the vehicle moved faster than wind, even though that doesn't have any motor whatsoever. Maybe you could say a few words about her, especially I hope you saw the two women building propeller, where one is a professional having a corporation that is making propellers for planes, and is approved by FAA. Back to you.
Well, I appreciate that you sent me a link to her. I have not heard of her before. You also earlier in the week sent me a link to Steve Mould. I'm very familiar with him, and I've enjoyed his work for years. But she's a new person, so I get a chance this week. I'll watch a bunch of her YouTubes. Sundays are kind of busy. I have my 10-meter net in the morning. I have to do a little prep for this and other things going on, so I didn't have an opportunity to see. I saw her YouTubes posted, but I didn't have a chance to go through them.
Okay, so a few words. So the girl started to be some sort of mechanic when she was 8. When she was 13, she started to fly. Then she graduated with master's degree. I don't remember what kind of profession she got, but it was I believe mechanics, technology, something like that. And in age 19, she had her first aircraft she purchased, of course, because she was a nice, cute girl and pretty much manlike in tech. There was plenty of people who helped her. And then she decided that she's a new propeller. So she contacted a woman, not much older than her, probably about 5-6 years older, and she is a professional propeller maker. She lost her husband, a pilot, and who was making a propeller, but for a number of years he taught her how to make the propeller. So that one of the videos shows that the young girl coming to that manufacturer, and those two women were making a propeller for her aircraft. So it was amazing. Another thing, we have a few words. Swedish Artemis technology spoiler. Do you have a few words for it?
Say again?
But when?
Paul? Yes, Paul?
Just thinking about this wind thing. I mean, if you have any kind of a car or any kind of a vehicle, it could just be a platform with four wheels on it, and you put a sail up, that vehicle's going to move. If you have a propeller, and you have a 30-mile-an-hour wind, you're going to turn that propeller, and the propeller's hooked up to a drive. Yeah, the vehicle would move. But to actually say it's going to go faster than the wind, there's something wrong with that, you know. But, I don't know. When he first started talking about it, it reminded me of the old cartoon with Popeye. You know, he gets into a little boat with olive oil, and he's trying to escape, get away from Brutus. And he's sitting there, he's got a big square sail in front of him, and he's blowing on it with all his might, and this way he's able to get, you know, I mean, that's the way it started to sound. That wouldn't work. But I could see a propeller turning and actually having a gear and making the vehicle move, but not faster than the wind. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, Paul. I mean, that's the intuitive problem. The way we kind of have a model of the world in our head, and some things make sense and some things don't make sense. And when they came up with this topic, a lot of guys, professionals, were willing to put up money to say that this was all nonsense and was misproven. So unfortunately, occasionally the intuitive things that we sort of take for granted need further investigation because we intuit it a little bit wrong.
KG201.
You know, I mean, it could be like the sailboat. You know, you get into a sailboat and you might have a 30-mile-an-hour wind going in one direction, but you could, you know, tack into that wind. And, you know, but the wind is, let's say, going due north. You know, when you're tacking, you know, you're not going due north. You're going off to the side, maybe on a 45 somewhere. And maybe at that point, you might be going faster than 30 miles an hour, but not in the exact same direction that the wind is blowing. I mean, that's the way it goes when you're tacking into the wind, you know. But, maybe it's the same thing with this propeller, you know. Maybe the wheels are facing a certain direction, and it's kind of like, Maybe they're tacking into it. I didn't see the video. Maybe it's a similar idea to that. Back to you, Ron.
Okay. I forgot to say a few words. There's not one video. There are three videos, minimum, with the fourth one made by the Chinese English-speaking girl. So she's like an English girl. She's like an American. I mean, she's an American. Half Chinese, half white. And she made the final of that. So it started from Veritasium investing a huge amount of money, hiring one of the most expensive guys on the field to to film all of that story. It's a potato jet. Yes, that's the way that you're hearing it. Potato jet.